Hi, everybody. Okay, so we are going to look at a part of the Seder that is very significant. We make a big deal about saying it. It's one of the parts of the Seder that we really focus on that you have to say, right? But our question here is going to be, what do we mean when we talk about the sayings of Rabban Gamliel, right? When he says that you have to say these three things, or you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pesach, what's going on here? So basically, my question is, what is the Seder about? Right? It's sort of a weird question to be doing in the last hour of a marathon classes on the Seder, but that really is the question. What is the Seder about? Are we trying to teach about Yetziat Mitzrayim? Are we trying to remember? Is it a focus on Vehigadeta Lebincha? Or are we trying to somehow recapture, in whatever way possible, the experience of Pesach in the Mikdash? Okay, and the two pictures I brought here really could not be more different, but they are both celebrations of Pesach. The one on the right is familiar to all of us, right? Maybe your Seder plate looks a little different, but we all know what that is, right? We sit around the table, we work really hard, or else you go to a hotel. But in any case, you're always sitting around the table, hopefully with your family. You have these symbolic foods on the Seder plate, and you read the Haggadah. The picture on the left is much more foreign to most of us. This is a picture of the Zevach Pesach of the Samaritans, of the Shomronim, where they actually do what it says in the Torah, meaning on Yud Dalid in the late afternoon, they go and they take their animals and they bring them and they shech them and they put them in pits to roast. And at midnight, they eat them together with their matzah and their maror. They are really doing a Zevach Pesach. And when we look at these two pictures, we say, oh, that one on the left, no, not for me. The one on the right, that's the one I want. But what's the real Pesach, and what is the Seder trying to evoke in us? So that's the question that we're gonna to explore here. There is a source sheet. I saw that Rabbi Kalman put it in the chat. It's, but you can also see it on our PowerPoint. And any questions people have, please put in the chat. Okay. In order to understand the importance of the rabbis creating the Seder, you have to imagine Pesach in the time of the temple. Okay. Pesach in the time of the temple was a huge spectacle, like Yom Kippur in the time of the temple, like the Bikurim in the time of the temple. Everything was a spectacle. One of the things that's very kind of strange and almost funny about our Seder is we focus so much on, well, how are we going to get the children to ask questions? How are we going to keep the children awake? How are we going to keep the children alert? Right? And in the last, certainly in the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years, there's been so many different books that have come out, and everyone has their games and their puppets. You did not have to keep even the most apathetic child awake in the time of the Mikdash, because there's no manishtana. Everything is nishtana. Everything is different. You're not at home. You're in a foreign place. You're with all sorts of other people. You're going to be eating. You're going to the temple, and you're having this huge sacrifice fest with hundreds of people, one after the other, going in and giving their korbanot. You're going to eat with a group of people on the rooftops of Yerushalayim. You're going to sing Hallel, the Gemara in Pesachim says, until the roofs would break, right? The roofs would shake. It's just something that no child could not be amazed by. And there's nothing to have to keep the children awake. And this is what the Mikdash was all about. Okay. You packed yourself up. You went on your journey. The picture here on the left, sure, a lot of people know this, but certainly people who come to my classes. This is the picture of the beautiful mikveh on Derech Ha'avot, right in Gush Etzion, right outside of Alon Shvut. You went to the mikveh, okay? What? Yeah, I'm online, right? Rabbi Kalman, give me a thumbs up.
Everything good.
Yes.
Keep going. Keep going. Great. Yeah.
Okay. You went to the mikveh, you prepared, you became tahor, you got to Jerusalem. The picture here on the right is the part of the pilgrim's road that's being unearthed in Ir David. You ascended to the Beit HaMikdash, right? Everything is different, everything is exciting, and everything focuses on the Beit HaMikdash, okay? And not only that, not only is it so different from our reality, it's actually different in terms of the days, right? Rav Yoel Ben Nun talks about this. We have the Chag HaMatzot. But what we're missing is the Chag HaPesach. We don't have the Yudalid, right, on the 14th of Nisan going and bringing the Korban Pesach. We don't have anything that resembles that. So this is the reality of the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And what you have to, sorry, wrong direction. What you have to picture is waking up on the day after Tisha B'Av, if you were lucky enough to survive the attacks by the Romans, okay, fast forward less than a year to Pesach, what do you do? What do you do? How can there even be a Pesach? There's no Mikdash. There's no Korbanot. How can there be a Pesach? And we know that the generation of the Korban and generation afterwards, but certainly the generation of the Korban, is completely devastated. They are mourning. Of course, they're mourning, right? We're going through such a hard year this year. We understand the mourning for the lives that were lost and the places of the communities that were destroyed, but they're also mourning the fact that what has happened to our Judaism, right? How do we continue now? How does our Judaism work? And we have a few famous examples of this in rabbinic literature. I brought you one here where the teacher is Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who we're going to come back to in 1 second, and the student is Rabbi Yoshua, right? And Rabbi Yoshua questions, how can we continue to do what we need to do? Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai left Jerusalem. Rabbi Yoshua followed him, and he saw the holy temple destroyed. Rabbi Yoshua said, "Woe to us! The place where all of Israel's sins are forgiven is destroyed. How can we possibly have atonement?" Right? And this is where we get into the question of Yom Kippur in a post-Mikdash world, which we're not going to talk about today. But how can we have atonement? There's no more place to bring our korbanot. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "My son, do not be distressed. We have a form of atonement just like it. And what is it? Acts of kindness, gmilut chasadim." Right? Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai says, "It's okay. God gave us another option, but it's very hard to wrap your heads around that option." The second story, maybe more famous in the Gemara in Bava Batra. Here, the person who's being who's giving the instruction is Rabbi Yoshua, right? He now becomes the teacher. When the temple was destroyed a second time, there was an increase in the number of ascetics among the Jews whose practice was not to eat meat and not drink wine. Rabbi Yoshua said, "My children, why don't you eat meat or drink wine?" They said, "Shall we eat meat from which offerings are sacrificed? Now the altar has ceased to exist. Shall we drink wine, which is pours of the libation upon the altar?" Right? He goes on and he says to them, "Okay, you're right. Don't eat bread. We don't have the lechem. We don't have the table, the shulchan, the lechem apanim." They say, "Okay, we won't eat bread." He says to them, "Don't eat fruit. We don't have bikurim. Okay, we won't eat fruit. Don't drink water because we don't have nisuch hamayim." And they realize that they can't go on like this. Rabbi Yoshua said to them, "My children, come and I will tell you how we should act. To not mourn at all is impossible, as the decree was already issued, but to mourn excessively is impossible, as the sages do not issue a decree upon the public unless a majority of the public is able to abide by it." So Rabbi Yoshua says, a person can plaster his house, but leave over a small amount, right? All the things that we do, the Zecher LaChorban. Now, in the Gemara, it's inconceivable to the people not to mourn the Beit HaMikdash, and Rabbi Yoshua has to kind of temper that. For us, I won't say it's inconceivable, but it's very difficult for us to mourn the Beit HaMikdash. We don't understand this reality. In that sense, Chazal, in offering us alternatives and ways to mourn, are somewhat too successful. Okay? And just one more example of this, and then we'll get to the Seder itself. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is, of course, the person who's most famous for trying to find the medium, the perfect balance between remembering the Mikdash but carrying on the way we are today. And so he says things like the fact that we took the lulav and the etrog in the Mikdash for 7 days, and in the rest of the country only one day. Now we're going to take it everywhere for 7 days, right? And the shofar and the Beit Din and many different things. Here's where you have a beautiful beautiful idea of this balance. Hey, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, this is something that's coming up soon, also instituted that for the entire day of waving the Omer offering, right, Yom Hanef, eating the grain of the new crop is prohibited. What's the law? Until the Omer, Korban HaOmer, is brought to the Beit HaMikdash, second day of Pesach, you can't eat the Chadash, the new grain. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you waited until you knew that the Korban was brought, and then you could eat. But what about when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed? Why do we have to wait? What is the reason, says the Gemara? The reasoning is that soon the temple will be rebuilt. And people will say, last year, when the temple was in ruins, didn't we eat from the new crop? As soon as the eastern horizon was illuminated, we ate right away in the beginning, right? We were allowed to eat right away, but they're going to make a mistake because they don't know that now things are changed for the Beit HaMikdash has been built. Now too, let us eat the new grain at the time, right? The Gemara says it much more beautifully, Meirai Bana Mikdash. Soon the Mikdash is going to be rebuilt and then the reality is going to change and we don't want people to get used to this reality of no Mikdash, right? So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai has to balance. How do we go on living life? How do we remember the Beit HaMikdash, Mehira Yibaneh HaMikdash? The idea that you have a religion without a temple, it's very shocking in the ancient world. And that's one of the things that Chazal do, and it's very, very powerful. But the process of creating a Seder is even more radical because you're taking something that was all about the Beit HaMikdash and you're putting it somewhere else. So first, let's understand quickly, who is Rabban Gamliel? I agree with Rabbi Helfgott, by the way. We need 45 minutes. Rabban Gamliel, in our story of Rabban Gamliel, says you have to say three things at the Seder. Very confusing who is Rabban Gamliel because there's a lot of Gamliels. It's a long dynasty. Usually when we have just Rabban Gamliel without the extra title Hazaken, okay, Hazaken is the one who lived in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabban Gamliel, without that description, is his grandson, Rabban Gamliel, who lives in the time of Yavne. It lives in the time of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. His main thing as the president of the Sanhedrin, as the Nasi, was to make sure that Am Yisrael was unified. He fought against the sectarian divisions that had happened, that had been tearing the people apart in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And so he has a lot of conflicts with the other rabbis with the idea of making one Torah and not two. And here's one of those famous stories. We have a bunch of stories with Rabbi Yoshua. Here we have a story with Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, who refused to abide by majority opinion. And so Rabban Gamliel, along with the other scholars, excommunicates him. But Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was such an important scholar that when he was insulted by this excommunication, nature starts to go crazy. And even Rabban Gamliel was coming on a boat at the time and a large wave swelled over him and threatened to drown him. Rabban Gamliel said, it seems to me this is only for the sake of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, right? Because he was insulted. Rabban Gamliel stood on his feet and said, Master of the universe, it is revealed and known before you that neither was it for my honor that I acted, nor for the honor of the house of my father. Rather, it was for your honor, so that disputes will not proliferate in Israel and the sea calm from its raging. So Rabban Gamliel, part of this world of Yavne, of rebuilding Am Yisrael after the Korban, and also reuniting Am Yisrael and trying to get rid of the sectarian divisions. And this is the Rabban Gamliel that we're going to talk about with his three things that you have to say for Pesach. The picture here is the traditional site of the tomb of Rabban Gamliel in the modern Jewish city of Yavne. We will not go into whether it is or it isn't. Okay. The rabbis have this challenge. What do we do, right? What do? Do we cancel Pesach, right? In a sense, you sort of think, well, maybe we should cancel Pesach. There's no more Korban. If there's no more Korban, how can we possibly have this holiday of Pesach? And what they do is they create a structure for that night, that first night of Pesach. We call that structure a Seder, okay? An organized meal, partly based on the idea of a Greek symposium, right? This kind of a meal where you have ritualized series of speaking, drinking, eating. Everybody is a free man, or woman, right? According to the opinion of Isha Chashuva, is like a, gets to recline also. So everybody gets to recline on couches. You include the matzah, you include the maror, but what else, right? What's going to take the place of the Korban Pesach that is no longer here, right? And Rabban Gamliel comes along and says, okay, let's focus on the halacha and let's focus on the mikdash. Okay, so let's read. We have two versions here. If you look at them very quickly, you will say that you'll think they're the same, but there's a slight difference and it's a very interesting difference. Okay, the Mishnah in Pesachim. Okay, first of all, where do we get our Seder, right? Our Seder Lo Pesach. If you learn the Gemara in Pesachim, you know that after nine exhaustive chapters of many, many details of what is chametz, what is matzah, what is maror, and especially how do you bring the Korban Pesach, right? Finally, in the last chapter, the 10th chapter, Arvei Pesachim, then we have the few Mishnayot that are kind of the core of our Seder. And obviously we also have the text of the Bikurim that comes from the Torah, but in that, in the Mishnah, it tells us that's what you're supposed to read. And this is the rabbis in the time of Yavneh coming along and saying, okay, this is what the Seder is going to look like. And here's Rabban Gamliel in the fifth Mishnah in the 10th chapter of Pesachim. This is the source on the left. Rabban Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bepesach lo yatsa yidei chovato, right? We know that. Anyone who did not say these three matters on Passover has not fulfilled his obligation. Ve'elohein, Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Now here's where we get to the interesting part. Pesach, al shum shepasach hamakoma batei avoteinu b'mitzrayim. Why do we have the Pesach? Because God pasach, right? God passed over the houses of our forefathers in Egypt. That sounds like what we read in the Haggadah, but it's not exactly what we read in the Haggadah. Let's look at the Haggadah. Rabban Gamliel Omer, et cetera, et cetera. And then the second part here. Pesach, shehayu avoteinu ochlim bizman shebeit hamikdash haya kayam al shuma. The Haggadah adds in our forefathers used to eat this in the time of the mikdash. Rabban Gamliel doesn't say that, right? Rabban Gamliel says, and maybe does, as we're going to see, Pesach, Matzah, Maror. He says all of them together. He doesn't single out Pesach as something that we used to do and we don't do anymore. Okay. And we have fascinating examples that perhaps hints that perhaps Rabban Gamliel actually continued to sacrifice the Korban Pesach and perhaps even did it in the Mikdash. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Zoldan wrote an article about this, whereas about 20, 30 years ago, where he brings proofs, right, from the Gemara, from the Yerushalmi, that the Mizbeach stood on Har HaBayit for 54 years after the Churban. Right? It was only destroyed by a Roman official named Rufus 54 years later, meaning in the time of Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, the Mizbeach is still standing. And he suggests that when it talks about Rabban Gamliel having his roasted Pesach, his tzli, he's doing it on Har HaBayit. Okay. Now, what are our sources here? We have a whole bunch of sources, right? Let's skip the first one for a moment on the left. We'll come back to it in a second. Okay. But we have at least two places, right? The Mishnah in Pesachim, chapter 7, Rabbi Tzadok said, there was an incident with Rabban Gamliel who said to his slave Tavi, go and roast the Pesach for us on the grill. Tzli, right? We know today our custom is we do not have, at least Ashkenazi custom, we do not have a tzli. We don't eat roasted meat because we say, no, that was for the place of the Mikdash. But Rabban Gamliel, he did. Okay, again, the Mishnah in Ediyot. Rabban Gamliel declared three decisions of a lenient character, right? Three kulot. Roasting a kid whole, gdi mikulas, on the night of Passover. What's a gdi mikulas? Rosho al kirav. That's how Rashi explains it, right? That it's exactly like what we saw in the Samaritan picture, or almost exactly. Okay, so Rabban Gamliel seems to think that it's really fine to make a Pesach on your own on the night of Pesach, okay? The Mishnah in Pesachim, chapter 4 is a whole chapter all about minhagim, right? Minhagei hamakom, and what you're allowed to do. And some places do like this, and some places do like that. And here we have makom shenagu le'echol tzli b'leil psachim, in a place where people were accustomed to eat roasted meat on Pesach, ochlim. You can eat it. Makom shenagu shelo le'echol ein ochlim. It seems like it was something that was done. Even more so, look back on the left now. Remember our four questions, right? Our manishtana, to keep the children awake. Our manishtana does not include what the Mishnah in Psachim says. Shebechol halelot anu ochlim basar sli shaluk umivushal. Halayla hazet kulo tzali. On this night, we eat only the roasted meat. When the Mishnah is being written down in the time of Yavneh, they're eating tzli. This is not a problem. And in fact, if you want to say, okay, well, maybe they did it then. It was the first generation afterwards. We have Haggadot that go till the Cairo Geniza, meaning 1,000, 1,200 years ago, that have this nusach. Halayla hazeh kulo tzali. It seems that people did this. And what's the balance, right? Can you just talk about it, or are you actually allowed to do it? Today we say, oh no, you can't do it because you're bringing the mikdash into your home. It's not right. Now we have a place in the Gemara in Psachim, this is our last source here on the right, where the rabbis don't like this, right? They speak out against it, but it's for a different reason. Okay. Rabbi Yossi said, Todos of Rome instituted the custom for the Roman Jews to eat kids roasted gdi mikulas whole on the evenings of Passover. Now we don't know if this Todos is in the time of the mikdash, not in the time of the mikdash, not clear. Okay. The sages sent a message to him saying, if you are not Theodosius, Todos, we would have decreed ostracism upon you. We put you in cherem. As it appears, not that you're doing something wrong on Pesach, but what does it appear? As if you are feeding Israel consecrated food outside. You are eating chulin that is not in the Beit HaMikdash. It's not that you can't do this, but you can't do it in Rome. Because in Rome, it looks like it's allowed to have a mikdash that's outside of the land of Israel, or that's outside of Yerushalayim. But in other places, in Eretz Yisrael, Rabban Gamliel, on Har HaBayit, doesn't seem to be a problem, right? Fascinating. Now, the focus of the Seder, according to Rabban Gamliel, should be on the mikdash, on the halachot, Pesach, Matzah, Umaror, right? And we have a Tosefta, again, in the same 10th chapter of Psachim, that has a paragraph that sounds very familiar to us, except it's a little off, okay? This is on the right. A man is obligated to be involved with the laws of Pesach the whole night. It happened that Rabban Gamliel and the elders were once reclining in the house of Baitos ben Zunin in Lud, and they were involved with the laws of Pesach the whole night, until the call of the rooster. If that's sounding vaguely familiar to you, look at the Haggadah. Only in the Haggadah, it's a little different. The characters are different, and what they're doing is different, right? Rabban Gamliel is sitting with this Kenim in Lud. They're talking about the laws of Pesach. The paragraph that we know, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon are reclining in Bnei Brak, not so far from Lud, and we're telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt the whole night until their students came and said to them, the time of reciting the morning Shema has arrived. Rabbi Gamliel says, talk about the laws, talk about the Mikdash, maybe even do the Mikdash. Rabbi Akiva says, no, no, no. Our focus is different. Our focus has to be to talk about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, to talk about the Geula, because who is Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is the man of Geula, right? And if we talk about the redemption from Egypt, we're also going to be remembering the redemption that's going to be coming in the future, right? We want to think about that past redemption in the hope of the future redemption. By the way, fascinating, this source about Rabbi Akiva, the only place we have it is in the Haggadah. It's not in the Mishnah. It's not in the Gemara. It's not in the Medrash. It's only in the Haggadah. And it seems like somebody took the Rabban Gamliel story and changed it. Now, who won out, right? Rabban Gamliel and the focus on the Mikdash, or Rabbi Akiva and the focus on talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva, we have very little about the Mikdash in the Haggadah. We have very little about the Korban Pesach in the Haggadah, and our focus is on Yetziat Mitzrayim, is on talking about coming out of Egypt. However, okay, and this is we'll be ending up with this. Okay, Chazal might follow Rabbi Akiva's approach for the Haggadah and for Leil HaSeder, but they follow Rabban Gamliel in many, many other ways. And the Mikdash is front and center in rabbinic literature, and in halacha. Okay. And the Mikdash is always the frame of reference. And I just brought you a few examples here, and they really are striking. And once you see them, you realize how many examples there are. Many Masechtot in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, begin with some connection to the Beit HaMikdash. Think about the very first Mishnah, right, in Brachot. What time do you recite the Shema in the evening, right? What's a normal answer? Ah, the sun set, the moon came out, it's time to go to sleep. No. From the time when the priests enter to partake of their truma, that's when you say the Shema. Okay. In Erevin, what's considered to be a doorway, an entrance, an opening, you take the measurements from the doorway of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Heichal. In Shabbos, right? What are the malachot? They're based on the 39 malachot to make the Mishkan. Okay. What are the measurements? The measurements are based on measurements in the Beit HaMikdash. How tall is your sukkah? Also, the height of the Heichal, of the doorway. What are your shiurim? Based on the Shivat HaMinim, we're always trying to hark back to the Mikdash and to the land of Israel, right? Those are our two places that we want to be thinking about, that we want to be connecting to, praying to return. Think about it. The Mishnah is written down, or redacted better, by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who is living more than 100 years after the Churban. The Gemara even later. Okay. The rabbis, when they talk about the Mikdash, are almost always talking from memories of traditions that have been passed down. They didn't see it themselves, but it's in front of their eyes. They're thinking about it. They're focusing on it. We're returning to it. We're coming back. Okay. And one last idea, which I think is a beautiful idea. Chazal made sure that we brought both the Mikdash and Eretz Yisrael into our homes. And this is an idea from Noga HaRuveni, who was a botanist and a Bible scholar and the creator of Ne'ot Kedumim, of the Biblical Nature Reserve. And he says Chazal arranged that on Shabbat, we would bring into our homes the three main crops of Eretz Yisrael, right? Dagon, Tirosh, Yitzhar. Grain, wine, and oil. The grain, of course, is the challah. The wine is the kiddush. The oil is the Neirot Shabbat. But these are also three things that are in the Mikdash. Okay, the oil is the menorah. The grain is the shulchan. Okay? And the wine is the nisuch hayayin. So in our Shabbos tables at home, we are bringing the Mikdash in. We are bringing Eretz Yisrael in, and even in the farthest flung places of the diaspora, far from the Mikdash, far from Eretz Yisrael, we are bringing those things into our home so that we will remember and so that we will come back. And when we finish up the Magid, and I hope I'm not going to cut into what Yael is going to talk about in a few minutes, but when we finish the Magid, the bracha that we say at the end, right after we drink our second kos, what do we say? We incorporate both Rabbi Akiva's vision of the past Geula and the future Geula, as well as Rabban Gamliel's vision of coming back to the Beit HaMikdash. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Ge'alanu V'Ga'al Et Avoteinu. Okay, right, and Me'avdut L'Chayrut Kein Hashem Elokeinu V'Elokei Avoteinu Yigi'enu L'Moadim U'L'Regalim Acherim Smechim V'Binyan Yirecha V'Sasim V'Avodatecha. Right, and we will come and we will bring our psachim and we will bring our korbanot to you, and that's our prayer on at the Seder. So we are removed from the way that we used to celebrate, but Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva make sure that we come back to the basis of the Beit HaMikdash and of the idea of Geula. And with that, we have many hopes for a Geula, Bekarov Bi'Ameinu. I'm going to take a quick look at the questions here, if there are
There are
questions.
two questions, I
Okay.
think. Thank you. Yes.
What? How could the goat be roasted during the? We don't know if the goat was roasted during the time of the Geniza, but we know that they did continue to include that element of the Mikdash in their seders, right? They didn't say, oh, you can't have the tzli because that's too much like the Beit HaMikdash. No, we actually want to have things with Adra, but we want to have things like the Beit HaMikdash, right? Or did they just continue the question because nobody changed it? And we don't know, okay? Rabban Gamliel was not a Kohen. The house of the Nasi was from the Shevet Yehuda, from David HaMelech. And we don't have proof that he did this, but it's an interesting suggestion, meaning when there's no more Mikdash, could anybody go and do that and give their Korban? I don't know, right? The korban is given by, it doesn't have to be done by the Kohanim. This is a korban that everybody is allowed to give. But that's an interesting question. I don't know. Okay. Thank you very much. Chag Sameach to everybody. And you have an extra minute to breathe.